This podcast is a presentation of UCTV.tv, University of California Television. Like what you learn? Help others discover UCTV podcasts by leaving a comment or rating in iTunes.
Only in opera can you say something's been updated to 1920.
I think it was really a brilliant stroke that Mrs. Domingo set it in the Roaring Twenties. It's suddenly very glamorous and showy, and that's perfect for the dramaturgy of the piece.
When they call it roar, that means, you know, it was wild. Wild.
There's something wild about you, child, that's so contagious. Let's be outrageous. Let's misbehave.
And in the United States, you know, the youth was almost out of control. In a different way, maybe, of the Belle Époque, you know, but they were wild.
They say the spring means just one thing to little lovebirds. We're not above birds. Let's misbehave.
The song, Is That All There Is? Is that all there is, my friend? Then let's keep dancing. It's that idea. I think that they knew in the 20s that it was all going to come crashing down, and they may as well enjoy it.
Putting on the Ritz.
There were so many things going on, you know, the forbidden alcohol and smoking. And so all that really propitiate for me a new Traviata.
In terms of design, you get these beautiful lines.
I find the clothes fascinating. I mean, but I think particularly for the women, the clothes were really a step in a different direction. I think for the men, it stayed pretty, you know, you still have a tux on or you still have a suit, and it's, I think the hair, the hair, the facial hair, all that stuff changed a little bit for the men, but I think it's the women who really, I mean, that was a bold fashion move for women of that day.
You can see the World of Fuerte. I mean, it's, these women, they were so beautiful, so gorgeous. Never, never the women has been more elegant and more glamour than that, you know.
Everything's shimmering and these incredible silks and satins that are slinking around the stage. She pairs with a beautiful minimalism. And I think that that is such a strong choice. So you get what the deco idea of minimalism cloaked in the excess of the time. So you'll have the opening tableau, which I think is so stunning, which is a bare stage with one period-appropriate lamppost. You get the realism in that one moment, but then in an empty stage, it's a really strong choice in minimalism.
There are usually two things that inform my performance as I do a new production of the same role. One is life experience. I've been through things since I last saw the character, since we last conversed, and I have a new layer, dramatically and hopefully vocally as well, to bring to the character. But also, the production informs my delivery of the role, even vocally. The production I did before this was a more edgy, modern, raw kind of production, whereas this is more elegant, and while it is updated from the original, it is still a period production in a beautiful Art Deco era. So my singing and acting, the way I carry myself on stage, is informed by that. no way to get bored with this piece if you're curious. Vocally, because there's always a challenge. For lighter voices, the challenge may be later in the opera when it gets beefier. And for heavier voices, the challenge is keeping the voice light for Act One and staying in the joyfulness and bubbliness of the character in Act One. From an acting perspective, the layers are infinite. So I just love coming back to this piece, and I have several more productions coming in the future. From a musical standpoint, I really love the moment in Act Three at the end when she's dying, I guess in our version, Act Four, when Violetta hands Alfredo a memento of her when she was young. And in our production, it's a camellia to remind him of when they first met. The music is like a heartbeat that's struggling and then fading away. That's hallmark of Verdi. He is so dramatic in everything that he writes, and it informs exactly how it should be acted. So just from an acting and sort of diva standpoint, I really enjoy that moment. Alfredo is a young guy, pretty green, comes from a privileged family, and is sort of obsessed with this woman, Violetta, and actually follows her around for quite a bit and kind of keeps tabs on her before he actually has the courage to have a friend introduce him. I don't think he ever quite fully understands the depth of Violetta's illness and her situation. He's a little bit of a spoiled brat. But I mean, I think he has a big heart, but he has to learn those hard life lessons. And I think that he's a very different man at the end of this. The music I sing ranges from super happy, joyant, buoyant to romantic and very legato. And then there are scenes where Alfredo is very enraged, angry, vengeful. So it really covers the spectrum of emotion and musical style. So that's one of the things I love about Alfredo. Io vivo quasi in cielo, sì, io vivo quasi in cielo, io vivo quasi in cielo.
I think my favorite moment is in Act Three, when Alfredo confronts Violetta. It's at a party. Everyone leaves the room. He comes back because she asked him to. And that's when they really have a big kind of blowout. As an actor, that's just one of the most thrilling scenes to play.
Germain is the character I sing in this opera, the father of Alfredo. And his mission is to simply get Violetta to let go of Alfredo, to stop the relationship and, allow his daughter to be free to marry. Otherwise, he's got some big troubles. And he's often referred to as harsh or mean, but he's not. He's doing exactly what he thinks he has to do, and most fathers would do in that situation. My reassessment of Violetta happens very quickly. We all know that opera is condensed. Real life would take way too long. So it's within the first two pages that I reassess her character and who she is and who I've come to speak to. I had no idea she would be such a lady, so elegant, so intelligent, so well-spoken, so secure in herself with self-esteem and, a sort of a regal bearing. And I have to keep going to plan B and plan C and plan D to try to get across my desire and to gain my goal, my ultimate goal, which is for her to capitulate and do what I want her to do. And the way I get there, though, I gain respect for her as a person, as a human, and begin to see her as an equal almost and as a daughter by the time I think the duet's over. The aria di Provenza is obviously a very famous one. Baritones love to sing it, love to have the chance to sing it. It's not one of the most difficult of Verdi arias, but it does have its challenges. But it's also immediately accessible to the audience. The subject matter is something everybody can understand, why he's saying what he's saying, what he's saying, the reason he's saying it. It's a wonderful piece to sing.
The character I'm singing in this opera is Gastone, and he is a nobleman and a good friend of Alfredo, who is our lead tenor, And the sort of main purpose that I have, especially in the first act, is to act as Alfredo's wingman. That Alfredo's adores Violetta, and I know Violetta, and so I'm there to kind of help give courage to Alfredo to muster up the strength to talk to her. I mean, he adores her. He visited her for days or for months when she was sick. And so I'm kind of there to break the ice and get those two together in the first act, especially. Gastone has some great music to sing in this piece. It's a nice combination of some solo lines as well as singing with the ensembles as well, which is a lot of fun. He's very instrumental in helping the plot move forward in the solo lines, where whenever he's there to help Alfredo, you know, get the courage to talk to Violetta. He's also there to sing with the ensembles, like in the Brindisi, the famous drinking song. So he takes part in the communal action as well, and the music reflects that really well.
One of the most notable distinctions in a Verdi chorus is the melodicism in the musical materials, in particular the Libiamo of Act One, where Alfredo gets a verse of the Libiamo, and then the chorus gets to actually finish that verse, and then Violetta gets the second verse, and the chorus has a very memorable melodic end to that very celebrated chorus. So you really think about the Libiamo more as a chorus than a series of solo utterances. The chorus basically honors the tradition of functionality as a Greek chorus, therefore commenting on the actions of the principals and of situations. But in this particular opera, they go beyond that, beyond simple commentary, and they actually become quite involved in the situations. And that's notable in Act Two, the second scene of Act Two, where they take on a principal role. The ladies get a big featured solo as the gypsies, the chorus of Zingarelle. Gentlemen have a similar solo with the chorus of Matadors, and it's a real virtuosic tour de force in the party scene. But then they become integral to the plot as they determine the outcome of a situation involving Alfredo, Violetta's lover, where they actually admonish him publicly for his bad behavior in shaming Violetta in a very public situation, actually directing their ire at the character as opposed to just commenting on general situations.
Can you talk a little bit about the influences of Art Deco and Dmitri Chaparus?
The influence he might have on me was the ballet, exclusively the ballet. Because, you know, I was thinking, in Art Deco, what kind of a dancer you put? You know, in the very beginning, I thought of Josephine Baker. Not Josephine Baker, Josephine Baker. The way she wanted to be called in France. But, you know, her skirt of bananas didn't quite convince me. And then when I said, well, what am I looking for? I have it in front of me. That's, I have a statue, you know, at home. You know, this exquisite thing of ivory. The body is ivory. And the dresses is in bronze. So ideal, ideal.
She gave me specific images that were gestural or the body lines, because at this time in the 20s, there was this, like, they discovered King Tut's tomb, and they went crazy for the whole Egypt. It was an Egyptian craze.
So this is together, and then the arm is first, and then you stand up, and then stage right slowly, gently turns, and then it goes up.
So the girls are like golden gypsy girls, statues that have come to life, like golden gypsy statues that have come to life, and instead of, you know, the tambourine-wielding girls. And then the guy is sort of a combination of like Scheherazade with a little bit of Nijinsky feel, all of that sort of Egyptian line, but also very, very animalistic. So the women are more like prey almost in that moment, and he is more like the predator, the jaguar. So you see the women running from him, but they don't run very far.
Once the lights go down and everybody's settled into their seats, and this vapor of sound emanates from the pit, you already know that you're in for an opera that has a tragic outcome from the very first wafting of that chord. For me, it's actually one of the most sublime moments in the operatic canon. And we get to hear it at the very beginning and then in the final act as well, as an iteration in a different key. And then the second favorite moment is really the clarinet solo, as Violetta sits down towards the end of Act 2, Scene 1, to write her farewell letter to Alfredo. It's this very poignant use of the clarinet, and it's this plaintive, crying theme that really epitomizes her psychological state.
I think it's the perfect love story. Look in all the repertoire, you will never find a heroine like her. so generous, so unselfish. She left everything, everything. She sacrificed everything for love.
It's a story that anyone can relate to because it's about a central conflict of the soul. Even though it has to do with her being a courtesan, which maybe isn't a thing now, but it's a woman who is at a crossroads and can go one way or another. And the fact that she chooses love, even at the expense of her dignity and many other things, her life, I think that's beautiful. And no matter when you're seeing this piece, even 50 years from now, it's still going to resonate.
If someone's never seen an opera, I would certainly, that would be on my list of this is the first opera you should probably see.
Been listening to a podcast by University of California Television. For more information about this program or UCTV, visit us online at uctv.tv.